arrived today. The house we took in the
And as a radio public service, we are going to do what we promised this hour. Hear that din? We're speaking to someone later this hour who finds meaning in noise, but we asked you about the noise that would give your life meaning if you could eliminate it. Shirley Becker from Minnesota, can you hear that? People chewing food with their mouth open. Okay, Shirley, gone.
This is Ian Smith from Salt Lake City, Utah. The noise that bothers me most is car alarms.
Ian, out of there. Mihail McMorgan from Colorado would love to get rid of the sound of politicians. Oh, don't we all, Mihail? Be gone, drone of politicians. I love this.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, calling from Chicago. The noise I would love to get rid of, construction jackhammers.
Stephanie, your wish is my command. Ah, sweet, serene silence. In radio, that's usually what we're trying to get rid of, ironically, but we'll talk more about noise and the meaning of noise later this hour with Professor David Hendy and you. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to tell us that noise you'd love to never hear again. History is pretty visual. You can see a photo from a century ago. You can visit a room in a museum from the 1300s, right? Even stand before the paintings in an ancient cave where humans stood 30,000 years ago. But what would it all sound like?
The art, turns out, it seems to be in the really echoey part of the caves. So we can imagine, we're guessing, people going into these caves to chant, to roar, to provoke echoes. And to think of these echoes building up into a cacophony of sound. And echoes that would strike the people in these caves as if they're new sounds, as if they're sounds coming from behind the wall. So it was a kind of communication with the spirit world. And in these caves we find fragments of bone flute. We find rock pillars which look as if they've been repeatedly hit, filled with the sound of rituals that involved chanting and calling to summon up the supernatural.
All of that is correct, except you wouldn't hear the energetic sound of David Hendy's voice there, conjuring up soundscapes from human history. Hear what he does with the 14th century.
I suppose one of the defining sounds of the Middle Ages would have been the bells. Bells ringing out from monasteries and parish churches, not just ringing out the time of day, but calling people to prayer. The sound of the bells was something that drove away evil spirits. But of course, it depends where you were. I'm talking about bells as if the same bells were ringing everywhere. But if you go to somewhere like Istanbul, as it's now called, Constantinople, as it was, you would have had this extraordinary soundscape with calling to prayer for the Islamic mosques, some church bells, and also, at certain times in its history, instead of bells, which were banned, it would have been the wooden cimantron. Planks of wood that would have been beaten very loudly and rhythmically in place of bells.
David Hendy would know all this because as professor of media and communications at the University of Sussex, he is in love with noise. Not in the way you might think, as mere meaningless din, but noise as a form of media, conveying the meaning of a time, as when the world entered the industrial age.
In the factories of Britain, say, there are vivid descriptions in Birmingham and Manchester of the extraordinary noises of hammering and metal upon metal and engines, hisses, roaring. Sounds that are described as earthquakes. Elevated railway rattling very close by. Dazzling mosaic of voices and accents in the street, Irish, German, Polish, Italian, Jewish. The cobbled streets would have been very noisy, with iron-rimmed wheels of horses and carts, much noisier than the first motorised traffic. and of course a lot of home working. It was in these tenements that thousands and thousands of sewing machines would have been clattering away, making cheap clothing.
We're turned on by noise this hour, and we'll hear what sounds David Hendy would switch off if he could. Tell us what sound you would turn off if you could, from this time or any others.
You would think that working from home as a writer would be really great and be really quiet in our neighborhood, but it is so noisy. There are all these carpenters hammering away, and it can be difficult to be home and concentrate on writing and not be annoyed by all the noises.
All right, Deborah, through the power of radio and because we are just good folks all the way around, we're going to hit the fader here. Now, get those brilliant thoughts down on paper. Lisa LaRock McMahon from Rhode Island. You know, I'm with you. Let's lose the finger drumming, she told us on Facebook. And we'll do an upgrade with real drummer Neil Peart from Rush. Sarah from Dallas would turn off those adorable, irresistible
alpacas that live next to us. Now you would think, oh, alpacas are cute. No, they scream.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to share the noise that you want, most of all, to turn off. And with all this talk of noise this hour, we thought we would spend some time thinking about how noise, how sound itself, defines time and culture. The seeming randomness of economic numbers, the digital pings and pops all around us, voices, music, traffic, all mean something about how we live our lives. We've been hearing from you all hour about the things you would turn off in the din of your own lives. David Hendy, though, is really the master at all this. Professor of Media and Communication at the University of Sussex and author of Noise, A Human History of Sound and Listening. Noise, he says, is like all media. It's everywhere and is trying to tell us something if we know how to listen.
Sound is something which, yes, we take for granted, but which has some sort of power over us emotionally. It's been described as touching at a distance, and this is both dangerous and scary because, of course, if power can change our mood and emotions, then it's potentially a means of controlling us or us controlling other people. But it's also a kind of rather wonderful thing because here is this thing that actually we can all do. We can all make sounds. And in that sense, it's a very democratic and exciting and volatile thing as well.
What is the transition from orderly sound like speech to beautiful sound like music to noise, which doesn't often have positive connotations?
For me, as a cultural historian, what's really interesting is that different people over history have had a very different set of ideas about what's noisy and what isn't noisy. So to talk about the European colonists who went to America in the 16th century, for them, the sounds, the languages, the speech, the music, the singing of Native American peoples was noise. It was hideous, it was meaningless, it was demonic, and so on. And I suppose the nearest I could get to defining noise would be noise is a sound that someone somewhere doesn't want to be heard. And I think what's interesting about that is it doesn't necessarily refer to the actual aesthetics, whether it's musical or not, but it refers to the idea of the social disagreement. In other words, one person's music is potentially another person's noise. And really it's about control. It's whether it's a sound that you can turn off or not that I think turns something into noise.
The descriptions that you have of wartime noise that are as evocative as any other element of the battlefield. How did you, first of all, get those descriptions? And can you put yourself in some of the places that you describe?
Well, war, as they say, is hell, and it also sounds like hell by other people's accounts. If you go to, say, some of the remains of the trenches on the Western Front from the First World War, they are incredibly quiet, peaceful places. It's very difficult to imagine yourself there, surrounded by noise. But if you read memoirs and diaries and descriptions of those who fought in the First World War in the trenches, it is very striking how much noise and sound was a defining part of the experience. And of course, that's partly because if you're in the trenches, in these smoky battlefields, and you couldn't really put your head above the parapet, a lot of the war, you had to work out how it was going through sound rather than through vision. So yes, it was very, very noisy with all the gunfire, artillery, unending artillery bombardments. But you learned as a soldier to decipher, to decode these sounds, to use sound to work out the position of enemy guns. And of course, there are a whole range of other sounds that you can imagine, the squelching mud. And occasionally, of course, there are quiet moments in war and people would have had a very strong emotional attachment to home. They would perhaps play gramophone records and play music to remind them of home and so on. So there's a rich soundscape, and this was very, very powerful. And those soldiers who, after the war, suffered from shell shock very often experienced it in the form of noises in their head. So in other words, it wasn't just that they were traumatized by noise at the battle. They were traumatized by it for many years afterwards.
One of the narratives here is how we go from the gramophone era, where people would take Mozart out into the deserts of Africa and experience a new joy at the music, to the 21st century, where people are most irritated by the noise in the headphones of the person sitting next to them, or the boombox and iPod player that's happening in a city street. Have we passed some threshold beyond which we can really make sense of the noise?
It's certainly clear that at some point in usually the middle of the 20th century somewhere, and it's usually associated with the mass media, with radio and television and commercial music, that sounds became pervasive and somehow always on, and it's that always on quality which is irritating and perhaps has changed. Noise, the noise that other people make, has always been an issue. If you go back thousands of years, in ancient Rome, people are complaining about the noise of people, the noise of city traffic, of nighttime deliveries and so on. So complaints about noise are pretty constant throughout history, wherever you have people crowded together. And it seems to me that perhaps the issue isn't so much the sounds we make as the fact that our social life is becoming much more complex, much more crammed together. We are having to share the same spaces in a way that we haven't in the past. And that means that we kind of, we find it harder to rub along together. And sound and noise becomes a kind of bone of contention, because that's how shortage of space and struggles over resources sometimes manifest themselves.
If you could, as an all-powerful professor of media and communications, turn one thing off in the noise of your own life, what would it be, David Handy?
I suppose for me, it's street traffic. I live on a fairly busy street in central Oxford, and once a year, we close the street and we screen films and the children come out to play, and it's wonderful. And I think if I could turn off the sound of street traffic, and if I could actually bring human life back into the streets of my city, that would be great.
David Handy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
David Handy is a professor of media and communication at the University of Sussex, author of Noise, A Human History of Sound and Listening.
Within the sound of silence, in restless dreams I walk alone.